Here's a book to add to your summer reading list, How to Brew by John Palmer. Whether you want simple, surefire instructions for making your first beer, or you're a seasoned homebrewer working with all-grain batches, the fourth edition of How to Brew has something for you. The book has been completely updated and expanded, and there are five totally new chapters. Order a copy at brewerspublications.com or grab a copy at your local homebrew supply shop. Welcome to Basic Brewing Radio for Thursday, July 13th, 2017. I'm James Spencer. Here at Basic Brewing Radio, we're all about home brewing. This week, we head to Boom Island Brewing Company in Minneapolis, Minnesota, where we taste their version of my sorghum Belgian ale side by side with my homebrew version. And we get to hear about how brewery founder Kevin Welch is turning inspiration he got from traveling to Belgium as a homebrewer into delicious commercial beers back home. If you're new to homebrewing and would like to get into the hobby for the first time, check out our website, basicbrewing.com, where you can find archives of our audio and video podcasts and our DVDs to walk you through basic and more advanced brewing techniques. If you buy any of our DVD combos, you get a free Basic Brewing bottle opener. And don't forget to get a copy of our Brewer's Logbook. You can use it to log and track up to 50 batches of beer. You can follow me on Twitter. My username is Basic Brewing, all one word. We also have a Basic Brewing Radio and Basic Brewing Video page on Facebook at facebook.com/basicbrewing. And thanks very, very much to everybody clicking on the Amazon.com associate link on our basicbrewing.com site. Whenever you think of Amazon shopping, think of us first. Go to basicbrewing.com. Find the Amazon ad on the right-hand side of the page there. The beauty part about it is it won't cost you any extra, and you'll be helping us to bring you this show, and we greatly appreciate your support. We also have associate links for Brewery Road Magazine and the American Homebrewers Association on our site as well. And you can find our Basic Brewing iPhone app on iTunes, which is easily accessible, easily searchable, and so is our Android app on Amazon.com. And we have a Windows Phone app. We're on the BlackBerry Podcast Directory, and we're on the Stitcher app as well. We're on Google Play Music, and we're on the iHeartRadio app. And I'm sure there are other places where we are at as well. And finally, if you want to put a tip in our tip jar, some coinage in our virtual guitar case, you can go to basicbrewing.com/support. And thanks to everybody who's done so already. I'm having fun with kombucha. Kombucha and hops and beer. Since talking to Phil from My Life as a Foodie a few episodes ago, I've made several batches of kombucha. And I've been dry hopping them with different hops and different amounts of hops. And I'm liking the results. Steve and I are planning to get together and shoot a Basic Brewing video episode about that process soon. It really is easy and fun to do and very tasty as well. And if you've been following me on our Facebook page and Twitter, you know that I have soured a wort with kombucha SCOBY, or the kombucha mother. It's another step in my experimentation with the mash and wort souring, that is, souring before the fermenter. I've used grain as a source of souring organisms, and then I moved on to a commercial strain, tried that. Then probiotics, I tried that. And I wanted to see what a kombucha mother could do with some wort. After all, you know, my kombucha, I've been letting it get down to a little less than 3 pH, which is pretty tart. It's the way I like it. It'll wake you up. And you don't have to get that far down for kettle souring, of course, because you don't want to kill the yeast. So I made a low-gravity, 100% rye wort, as I am wont to do, and I gave it a shot. I put the SCOBY from my kombucha in that 2 gallons of rye wort, and so far I'm happy with the end result. And no garbage smells, no diaper or dumpster, and the wort came down to around 3.2 pH in 3 days, which actually overshot my goal of 3.4 if I'm reading my pH meter properly. However, after I pasteurized and hopped the wort, I pitched the USO5. And it seemed very happy. There was evidence of fermentation, and in fact, the gravity came down a little bit. So, more details on that as it goes along, but I am very excited so far about that process. I'm also excited about talking about our sponsors, Desiree and Dave of High Gravity in Tulsa. If you're going through Tulsa, their tap room is open now. Pippin's Tap Room is open, so drop by and check it out. While you're there, you can also check out their full line of electric brewing systems and controllers. In addition to the brew-in-a-bag systems like Steve's and mine, they also have more traditional three-tier electric brewing systems. In fact, the build-your-own electric brewing system feature on highgravitybrew.com will let you customize your system to fit your needs. High Gravity offers systems that brew 5 gallons up to 2 barrels. And if you want to put your own gear together, you can find a variety of Warthog electric controllers to control your heat and your pumps. You get to pick the one that's right for you. And if you go to High Gravity's page on YouTube, you can see Desiree and Dave and us demonstrate several models of the controllers and the systems. And if you use code EBC75BB when you order online from highgravitybrew.com, you'll get $75 off your electric brewing purchase. EBC75BB. Check it all out at family-owned and operated highgravitybrew.com. Okay, I'm running this interview a little bit out of order. Kevin Welch volunteered to take Steve Wilkes, owner of Steve's Brew Shop, and me around to some of the breweries around Minneapolis. Very kind and generous. And he started us off with a beer up on top of his apartment complex there with a beautiful view of the city. And so by the time that we got around to talking about the brewery that Kevin and his wife, Shusha, founded, I hope I'm somewhere close, it was the end of the day. So we talk about Joe Pond from Ovalde Brewing, who was sitting at the table. So don't worry if you're a fan of Joe and Ovalde. Don't worry. We had a great chat with Joe as well, and we'll hear that later on. But and there may be a couple of references that you'll get also in a later episode. So if things sound out of sync, that's why. Now, I didn't mention that Kevin is a professional French horn player. So before we sit down with Kevin and his brewer, Justin Borick, Kevin gave us a little serenade. Kevin Welch, welcome to Basic Brewing Radio.
James, thanks so much, man. It's always been a dream.
We're here in your brewery. We're in Boom Island Brewing Company. Introduce your partner in crime here.
My partner here, Justin Borick, is he's brewing alongside at this point, and I'm more than confident in handing over all of this. Not all of it. I still like to I still like to claim a little bit of responsibility, but Justin's doing a dynamite job. Completely. Qualified to run all aspects of the production. Happy to have you, Justin.
Pleasure to be here.
It's delicious. And here we have Steve Wilkes.
Hi, James. It's a pleasure to be back.
So, Kevin, tell the story. How did we get here?
All right. So I was just catching up. Before I opened Boom Island Brewing Company 6 years ago, I was telling James just earlier and Steve, I had listened to every single archived episode of Basic Brewing Radio and a couple other that I've mentioned, and I highly recommend going back and listening to all the old archives. But there are a couple of very inspiring ones. I was just trying to catch up on what I missed out on recently, and I saw that James had brewed up this sorghum Belgian strong ale, which was a triple-like, but it was darker and a double, and what do we call it? And that was just hilarious. So my wife and I had just gotten back from taking a tour group of some of our 25 of our best tap room attendees to Belgium. And I was looking at Basic Brewing Video, and I saw this recipe, and I thought, what a better idea. Actually, Homebrew Con is going to be in Minneapolis. I would love to make this beer if that could just be an enticing enough reason for me to meet James and Steve in person. And it totally worked.
So, stalkers out there, start a brewery. Well, I was extremely flattered when you wrote and said that you were going to brew this beer. And this is beer that my beer, and I brought mine up, which is what's making me nervous, and we've got them poured side by side. But this is a beer that I made with the sorghum, sweet sorghum syrup from the sorghum cane that was harvested in Cane Hill, Arkansas. You also come from Arkansas as well.
Absolutely. I was born in the middle of a cotton... Well, I was born in Memphis, actually, but grew up... That was the closest hospital. Grew up in the middle of a cotton field in Wilson, Arkansas, which 85 years ago was the world's largest cotton plantation. Wow. So my grandfather was a sharecropper. My daddy was the 13th son of a sharecropping family. And so he was grown up in poverty and went out and struck out and pulled himself out of that. Ended up being the dean of students at the high school and a four-time state championship basketball coach in the state of Arkansas. So anyhow, I grew up in a sports family. How did I end up as a professional French horn player out of all of that? Good question. And then a brewer.
I want to make country music.
So you and your wife are professional French horn players. I feel like I know your whole life story, but you were a home brewer and listening to Basic Brewing Radio, but you decided to, what was it that led you into brewing beer professionally?
Well, the home brewing side of things started out from the orchestra background, classical music. My wife and I were professional French horn players, and so it was a tradition backstage on a Thursday night. There were about five or six of the brass players that were home brewers, and they would crack open and bring their home brews and share them backstage after the dress rehearsal. Then we would go to the local pub of good craft beer or brew pub and enjoy a whole bunch of good inspiring taste. And I finally started to feel a little bit of Arkansas guilt because I was drinking all their beer. And I decided to return the favor. And so I went back, and in between concerts, one concert to the next, over a couple of weeks, I went home and I just surprised them by brewing my first beer. Brought it back to share it with them, and it evidently it tasted good, or they were just being nice. I'm not sure. But they told me at that time, you've got to go down to this liquor store south of Minneapolis in a town called Burnsville, and it was Blue Max Liquor, and there you could get beer that was made by monks in Belgium, and it's called Trappist. This sounds groundbreaking these days, right? Sarcasm, expected. Went and did that, had my first taste of a Westmalle triple, and I had a triple Kamerlite at the same time. And little 11.2 ounces, little 0.33 liters. And I didn't tell my wife. I drank them all by myself, and I couldn't hide it by the time she got home. But what that did was it opened up the world of flavor beyond malt and hops, because there were flavors coming from the yeast, those special yeast strains. The more I dug, the more I learned, not only monks make these beers, other people make these beers in Belgium. And it might taste like spices from the yeast, but they might actually add spices. And then the more you dig, the more you learn. And it just became just an incredible hobby that flew out of control. I think I did three extract batches and then went straight to all grain.
And after a trip to Belgium, you were inspired to start your own Belgian-inspired brewery.
That was after the first trip to Belgium. It was incredible. You learn, you get a sense of the passion, and or what Joe has shared, perhaps, I don't know if it's on this podcast or on the previous one, but the passion and the emotion that goes in to the history and the tradition and the legacy and all of this creativity on an artistic side of creating flavors.
So, I can't stand it. I got to try the beers.
Oh, you haven't tried them yet?
No, I haven't tried them yet. I've been talking. So Justin, talk about the recipe. Talk about how it came out. What was it to work with this pitiful homebrew recipe from this guy in Arkansas?
Well, I think from what you'll taste once you notice it, the biggest thing we noticed when we pulled the ingredients was obviously the challenge of sourcing sorghum molasses here in Minnesota, which we had to get from Iowa. But the biggest thing we noticed was that the sorghum molasses you had acquired for your recipe was much lighter than the sorghum that we acquired. Ours was almost pitch black, whereas yours was kind of an amber. And interestingly, I think when you taste it, you can kind of notice your recipe that you brought with you has kind of a lighter honey sweetness almost, whereas the molasses that we got definitely has more of a molasses character to it that comes through in the final recipe. But other than that, it was a very easy transition. Very simple, very nice recipe.
And people, I didn't bring my recipe book, so people have to look at the video online to get the recipe. I'm tasting them side by side, and number one, I'm relieved because
that makes two of us, James.
Because they're both good. mine is more clear because it's several months old by now. I can't even remember when I brewed it. Yours is a bit more cloudy, but it's fresh.
Yeah.
But the character is similar. What do you think, Steve?
They're very, very similar beers. Delicious, I think. I didn't mean that as a joke, but they really are delicious. And I think yours tastes a little drier to me, and yours is a little juicier. But I agree that the sorghum flavor is a little lighter. You know, it comes across a little lighter, a little more delicate in your beer. But if you were to pour me one of these and then I drank it and I walked away and 20 minutes later I came back and you poured me the other one, I would not tell you that they weren't the exact same beer. You know, with a little distance between the two.
Well, I think mine is a little crisper, but I think that's because the yeast has settled out. I think maybe the yeast might be, maybe dulling is not the right word, but maybe it is adding that kind of juicy character to it. But I think that other than that, I think it tastes remarkably similar.
What was the finishing gravity on your original recipe?
Oh, I wish I had my book. do you remember, Kevin?
10-11. 10-11. Ours finished at 10-08.
Okay.
I'm pretty sure it was 10-11. It might have been just a little bit higher than that, but it was right around that ballpark, which we get that beer to, we get that yeast to finish out around there, but it all depends on how much of the Belgian caramel malt we use, because it has some inverted sugars, and the yeast can't eat all of that sugar chain in every scenario, especially depending on Carl Dingemann, which is 100% Dingemann's malt, what I used for this one. But I was basing that on the fact that James said it was Belgian Pilsner malt. And then that you had malted wheat in yours. We used not just malted wheat, but Dingemann's wheat as well. So I don't know if yours was American wheat or Belgian wheat. Steve might remember.
It would be American wheat.
American wheat. Yep, and so that might be a little bit variable in fermentability, but there's not a huge... We did not try this beer until we were just sitting here talking face-to-face. I refused for Jim behind the taproom bar to pour one. I said, that table over there gets none of that beer. They can have anything out of the cellars and the archives they want, but they don't get this beer until we do it spontaneously. And so it created plenty of anxiety for James
for
and myself.
Both of us. Yeah, for both of us. Yeah, and so this beer is actually going to be poured at your booth at the conference, right?
It's at the Cargill booth because Cargill is the sole importer of Dingemann's malt.
Okay.
And we use all Dingemann's malt at this brewery. And so we're pouring it. There's one barrel's worth of beer. So if you want to pop over there, I'm pretty sure they're poured for free samples. I don't think it's even possible to charge. So, but we sent them a couple of kegs, a couple of half barrels. And so that'll be poured. It'll also be at the, the kickoff tomorrow night, Thursday. But
right,
it'll probably
used to be called
past.
Pro Night.
Yeah. It'll be the pass by the time anybody hears this. but it'll be poured at the Cargill booth. And then we'll do it for the crawfish boil on Saturday. And it'll be, I think, at this point, a perfect pairing for a nice, big, rich crawfish boil from Baton Rouge, Louisiana.
Redstick, Louisiana.
That's right. Okay, so now that I'm all relieved, let's get back to talking to your brewery. What is your? I've been asking everybody, except I didn't ask Joe, I guess, today. What is the elevator pitch for your brewery? If you had spent 30 seconds with somebody, what is your philosophy? what can you tell people about what to expect when they walk in the door?
Well, I first have to try to preface the several trips to Belgium before opening it. There were a handful of, at that time, very tiny breweries, little farmhouse breweries, that highly influenced my brewing perspective. Number one, always unfiltered. Your beer must have living microbes in it. Now, this is where I feel that with Joe over here in Ovaldi, I feel like we're kindred spirits. Always unfiltered, living beer. Always re-fermented in the bottle. A couple of big advantages. Oh, this is not the elevator speech. So always re-fermented in the bottle.
It's a long ride.
And then the vast perspective of flavors in the Belgian tradition. And so I want to try to represent that as best as possible. When you come into the tap room or when you buy our beers on the shelf, you've got if you were to grab three or four bottles side by side, you're going to get radically different flavors. But this is what the Belgian tradition was about for the last 300 or 400 years. This is what U.S. microbrewing is about today. But these guys have been doing it for hundreds of years. And so they are, historically, what we're doing today. And so why not pay homage back to that? So I just made the business choice of doing only that, focusing on it. Now we take groups of 25 every year back to Belgium to meet my buddies over there. And we've got tons of small little farmhouse breweries that we're building alliances with, starting to do collaboratives, and just tons of fun, creative stuff happening.
So if you were to go over to Belgium, I'm assuming, haven't been yet. Kevin keeps talking to me about going, joining the trips. Sounds better all the time, doesn't it, Steve?
Yeah. It's hot.
It's delicious. So, I would assume that each brewery would kind of have its own sort of house flavor, house character, whatever. Are you trying to develop your own sort of house character, or are you sort of like a sampling of different houses across Belgium?
The approach that I've taken, because we're here, we heard this at Fair State a little bit earlier about it being IPA territory. Mm. I've taken the role of being the ambassador of traditional Belgian beer. However far that carries me, who knows? I mean, it's a tough road so far, and we'll keep working at it. But what I try to do here, on those trips, I made my own effort of collecting yeast strains that were very different in character. And I brought autoclave test tubes with agar slants in them, and I collected samples so I could come back and repeat all of that variety and vast spectrum of flavor that's represented over the last few hundred years in this country that has been as creative. If you compress that down into 10 years, that would be what we're doing today. And so, of course, the American microbrew scene is extremely creative, much more so than they are in Belgium today. They're very rigid and they're very traditional. You go to one to the next, and they really do have their house strains, and they love to coax out the character of this and that. But they're still a little bit hesitant to break out of that shell. And so what we want to do is we want to take that passion, that tradition, and the inspiration and the techniques and processes, but break beyond that shell and then continue to maintain those relationships and help pass it back to the mothership.
Wow. That's ambitious, I would say. So maybe should we sample another beer so
yes.
We can... So what are we about to have here?
Okay, so what we have here is a mixed culture of... it's two collections. Yeah, that's the way you should be bottling your beer right there.
The Minnesota Space Program.
So what we have here is our spontaneously fermented... you would call it a lambic if it was brewed in the lambic region, but let's not go there because I want to keep my friends at Oud Beersel, Jay Fontaine, and at Jean Van Roy at Cantillon. This is my version of a spontaneously fermented wine barrel aged for well over a year, sour, Belgian style sour, that has peaches added to it. So we call it a pêche. Simple enough. You tell me about the feedback on that one.
Mm. What do you think, Steve?
That's really, really good. Boy, the peaches are there. That's amazing because peaches usually don't stay. So I'm going to ask you in a minute, but I have another question first. So I'm going to ask you in a minute, how did you get the peaches in there? But first I want to ask you, so when I think of American beer, American brewing, there's West Coast this and East Coast that and Mid-Coast this. In Belgium, how are there particular areas where particular beers are brewed? And I don't mean down to the brewery. I mean that in North Belgium, are the beers different than in South Belgium, knowing that it's a tiny, physically not very big place?
Yeah. Yeah, that's historically, that's very much the case. You'll get your the brown sour beers, like what we know of as a Rodenbach Grand Cru. That's probably one of the most famous dark sours in Belgium. Those all happen just west of the city of Ghent in the Roeselare area. You got your Trappist, and that's a relatively new kind of tradition and taste, even though we like to think those monks have been making beer for a long, long time. But the flavors that they've kind of gravitated towards, that's a relatively new innovation. You get the wit beers kind of on the north coast. Bruges wit is one that I really, really gravitate toward. You get your Belgian pales in the east of Flanders, right around the Antwerp area. And I might be biased, but any other Belgian pale has taken inspiration from that great city of Antwerp, which is where I was sitting in the city square when I sketched out my first couple of recipes for this brewery here. In the south, of course, you have the tradition of the migrant workers, and every farmstead had to provide 2 liters of saison per worker per day to keep them healthy and happy. So that tradition comes out of there and then right up on the French border. And you get it right down to the, to like Joe does at Ovaldi, where he corked and caged the bottles. This is a direct influence. It was a trade back and forth from the Champagne region of France. And so it was a trade back and forth, and it's the method, méthode Champagne, I'm going to mispronounce it. Already I did it twice. Méthode champenoise à l'ancienne. So the ancient champagne method, where you actually have yeast in the bottom of the bottle, it's re-fermented. So the re-fermentation was a cross-cultural exchange. And I don't remember your original question at this point.
How you get the peaches in there?
How did you get them peaches? Well, I came from Georgia, and they went in very carefully. I am from Arkansas, by the way, and if that's not dodging the answer, then...
That's the pits. You got some stones. So... Maybe we can generalize here. When you began your journey from being the extract guy making your beers to brewing something as wonderful as this peach beer, what were the things that you think were most instrumental in improving you as a brewer of Belgian quote unquote style beers?
There's two. The first one is very literal, and the second one sounds gimmicky. Sanitation and inspiration. And that comes from my background as a professional French horn player. And I'm not trying to foo-foo up any of this. It really is about creativity on the part of the brewer and taking that as seriously as possible and treating it as a fine art. Because that's also what rang true to my soul on our very first trip to Belgium. Every single brewer I met respected himself or herself as an artist, as a fine artist. And that I could connect with. And that I could come back and really feel, hey, this is an easy transition. Step out of the horn playing and be a brewer, right? Of course this grunt work. I'm not afraid of some hard work. But at the end of the day, when you sit down and you've got a 5-minute performance or a 10-minute performance in a glass, and it's a fine art. This is exactly, I'm looking at Joe nodding at me right now, and it's exactly what his perspective is too. And I get it. That's what brewing is. And this is, sorry, this is the same for the home brewer. This is general, and in fact, we have Homebrew Education Day every middle, we have a big festival, and then our Sunday in the middle of July is always Homebrew Education. We don't invite them as homebrewers. We're brewers together. That's exactly, we're all artists together.
Now, you've done a lot of yeast collection and propagation, right? And yeah, it sounded like you meant it, Kevin. That's okay.
Did I not pull out some test tube slants to pour some West Veteran yeast in for you just this afternoon?
Okay. Yeah, yeah. And I said I'm not up to that. I'll buy it from the professionals. I don't have confidence. But you know, yeast obviously is a very, very important part of these Belgian-inspired beers. So what, you know, let's talk nuts and bolts here. Talk about what it's, how to properly take care of these so that they do what you want them to do, or you let them do what they want to do.
Yeah, of course. And then the old saying, especially in Belgium, is the brewer makes the work, the yeast makes the beer. Typical brewery, most breweries, and this is a very well-known fact, most breweries will have one house strain, and they'll refer to it as a house strain. That sounds all glamorous, but that means you only have to keep track of one strain. I'm juggling 9, 10, 11 strains on the board on any weekend, and it's a lot of work. But it's a lot of flavor that comes back at the end of the day, and it's very rewarding. And Joe does that as well, I'm sure. It can be very simple. It does not take that much monetary investment to have your own little small lab at home. You can get for $5 a little alcohol burner, and you work close to that flame. And there's plenty of online, you know, research that you can, and videos that you can learn to do this. Little petri dishes, grab a couple, and your agar. If you're close to an ethnic grocery, go to the Chinese grocery and get the actual gel that they make their jello Chinese desserts out of. And you clip it up, cook it up, and it's $1, $2 for a packet. You can order the lab-specific stuff online and pay $40 for a little tiny jar of it, but you can also just go, if you happen to be close to that sort of thing. It's just a little bit of education, minimal education, and you just take a little yeast, a yeast starter, which would be some unfermented wort, blend it in, and you pressure cooker, and then that's it. That's basically it. You can have your own little lab at home, and you could be banking your own yeast. Not to say that the big yeast labs, I love them, and I'm a big customer of them as well at the same time. You know, we've got to have our backups, and we've got to know who's got our backup, and we've got to know who's banking them at the same time, too. So, but I want to highly encourage anybody who would like to get into the just basic microbiology, and you can streak your plates and learn and let them grow up and incubate. It's a lot of fun seeing those little cell colonies grow up into discs, and you can harvest them off, and then you've got your own little yeast bank at home.
Yeah, we walked into your home today, and on the kitchen counter was a couple of 1 gallon jugs on stir plates, and you know, away they were going. And you know, we brought those here to Justin, and he, you know, put them to work.
They will become hoodoo later, hopefully later this week.
So you have a certain technique. You showed us the pressure cooker, or the cooker that you use to step. So it is really a continuation of stepping up and stepping up and stepping up, and pitching the proper amount of yeast.
Yeah, correct. I mean, ideally what you're doing is a tenfold step up at any given time on a commercial scale. For a home brewer, it's obviously much simpler because you don't have to get to that 10-gallon, 30-gallon level of, you know, just a yeast starter. You know, if you're building up from a slant, it may only take, you know, one, two prop ups from a small culture in order to get yourself a viable amount of yeast. Obviously, at a commercial scale, we have to do quite a bit more. But yeah, I mean, for a home user, it's really not difficult to grow up enough yeast.
I completely echo that. And it also, the couple of gallon jugs that James was referring to, they're cheap. They're not expensive, and you can get them at Steve's homebrew shop, I can guarantee you. And they work. I mean, they're glass surface. They're totally cleanable. And they work just like any lab equipment. You want to keep it really clean, and you pressure cook it every so often, and you get it back to sterile conditions. And then you can do your own microbiology right at home.
So instead of Erlenmeyer flasks, those are more like Arkansas Meyer flasks or something.
That's exactly correct.
So, first of all, give us some background on yourself, Justin.
Sure. Well, I started homebrewing 13 years ago at this point, and I had been, you know, homebrewing on and off for several years, obviously. I started working for Northern Brewer, obviously, here in town. That's sort of how I met Kevin, when he would come in for occasional things. And through that, we sort of developed a relationship where when he needed some assistance, I jumped in and helped out, and like to think that I earned my spot, but took on the full-time role here not that long ago. But my background is similar to Kevin in music. Mine's more on the technical side of things, but spent a few years doing that, decided I didn't like that, and decided to take a chance on brewing as a career, and I think so far it's paid off, and it will continue to pay off. We'll keep things going here.
Awesome. Sounds like you guys are a good team.
I'm very, very happy with the team that we have. Yeah.
So what's up for the future? I mean, what's in the cards? What are the plans?
You know, next up, based on a little fruition that came from our last trip to Belgium, that tour group that I took, we became good buddies with Taste Manhout from Western Flanders. And so we're doing a collaborative with him. I'm going to leave the details secret at the moment, but that's going to be an incredible cross-Atlantic, transatlantic sort of collaborative. And then we're going to bring him either here. We want to time it around Great American Beer Fest. And this year might be a little bit too soon, but if not, we'll look out for it next year. And we'll bring him here to release the beer. And then, I would really like to go to Belgium and brew my first Belgian beer on his system.
I'll help.
And Justin was more than willing to come along. So we'll see how those details iron out. That's one of the next really exciting things for me. We have our non-fruited Belgian Brussels area sour style, avoiding the word lambic, 3 to 1 year old barrel aged vintages, all getting bottled up in the next week or so. That one's going to be dynamite. James and Steve are going to drink that straight from the barrel, the oldest version of that, here in just a moment. Super complex. And then who knows? I'm going to toss an idea Joe's way sometime soon.
Well, awesome. I'm encouraged then to shut this off and go taste some beer. What do you think, Steve?
I think that's a delicious idea.
Delicious. I can't tell you how happy and how grateful I am that you took this opportunity to took the risk to take my homebrew recipe and step it up and to make it as delicious as you did. I certainly appreciate your taking us around town today.
I got to tell you, James, it's not that hard when you're starting from a great recipe.
Oh! And thus ends this meeting of the Mutual Admiration Society. Thanks again.
Love it. Thanks for having me on, James.
What a great day. Very inspirational to hear Kevin talk about how he approaches brewing, and more inspirational to taste the end result. And thanks to Justin for doing such a great job with my little homebrew recipe. And if you search on YouTube or in our video podcast feed for the sorghum Belgian ale. You'll find that recipe, and you'll see how I brewed it. And thanks again to Kevin, of course, for spending the day with Steve and me. Very informative, very helpful, and just a whole lot of fun. Beer people are good people, I always say. If you have brewing questions, show suggestions, or just want to say howdy, write to james@basicbrewing.com or just fill out the contact form on basicbrewing.com. And please don't forget to tell us where you're from. Check out our support link where you can throw a couple of bucks into the tip jar by subscribing financially to our podcasts. Be sure to check out our DVDs, Extract Brewing and Partial Mashing, Stepping into All Grain, Low-Tech Lagering and Decoction Mashing, and Introduction to Wine Kits. You can find them all on our site. Get a free Basic Brewing bottle opener with any DVD combo. You can check out our Basic Brewing shirts in the store as well. And find our logbook so you can track and log up to 50 batches of beer. Check all that out at basicbrewingshop.com. Thanks to everybody who's continued to click on our Amazon.com link. We appreciate the support there. Featured products this week that were purchased through the link are iGrill 2 Complete Master Kit with 3 Pro Meat Probes and 1 Ambient Pro Probe. And Leveland Hand-Painted Colorful Lovely Totoro Chinchilla Throw Pillow. Thanks again, everybody. And remember, I can't tell who bought what, so no worries there. Just click on the Amazon.com logo on our site the next time you feel like Amazon shopping. We greatly, greatly appreciate your support. Don't forget, you can also join the American Homebrewers Association and subscribe to Brew Your Own Magazine through the associate links on basicbrewing.com. That's all until next time. Until then, thanks for listening, everybody. I'm James Spencer. Production help for Basic Brewing Radio and our website is provided by Kelly Dodson. Basic Brewing Radio is a production of Active Voicing. We'll talk to you next time, everybody. So long.